This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Hey everyone, it's Deese here to tell you about a brand new show coming Wednesday, November 3rd called Some Imperfections, the SIP podcast, Some Imperfections podcast, hosted by life coaches Abby Buckenberger, Sierra Cossey, and myself. We are coming together to bring you a brand new show. It's going to be every other Wednesday starting November 3rd. You can find it on Deese Comedy and IamAlliance.me. The show combines Abby and Sierra, who are certified life coaches, helping you every day, bringing you a fuller experience to your life, helping you with all your world's problems. And I will be sitting on the side doing my usual slang and dick jokes. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a great combination. We've solving all the world's problems. Everything you need to know. I have great advice, guys. I just don't listen to myself. That's my problem. But we're going to be combining all of our knowledge, their genuine skills, my practical, ridiculous knowledge of getting myself into horrible situations and figuring out how to get out of it. And we will be answering your questions. We've got, you can email us. You can find us on Instagram at some.imperfections, on Facebook at some.imperfections. And you can message us, find us on Waze, Yelp, Yellow Pages, White Pages, any of the pages. Look us up, find us, send us your questions, your topics, things you want to talk about. We'll answer them anonymously if you want. Just let us know. We'll have links and all the upcoming information for you to let us know what you want us to talk about. So check that out, guys, tomorrow on Deese Comedy, The Social Hour, everywhere you find podcasts, and also at IamAlliance.me. And again, that is every other Wednesday from The Social Hour and I Am Alliance.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Everybody's got a vajayjay.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is the Social Hour. On today's show from the Daily Detour podcast, Dan Roberts. And now your host. He's happy Thanksgiving is over, so he can finally start the war on Christmas. Deese Casillas!
Malam Keen, everyone! Welcome to the show. Oh my god, I'm choking already. This is going to be just a great intro to this show. We're already dying on the vine. Malam Keen, everyone, welcome. Thank you. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese, and I'm going to make it through this episode. Thanks for coming around for another episode of the show. We appreciate you being here. We have a great show lined up for you this evening. Before we get into that, guys, I want to remind you, Some Imperfections, the newest podcast with Abby Buckenberger, Sierra Cossey, and myself. We are giving you life advice. They are certified life coaches. I'm a former alcoholic comedian, and together we bring you some good life advice. We've had a couple episodes out so far. We've had great response. If you follow us on Some Imperfections, that's some.imperfections on Instagram, there's links to where you can submit your topics, questions, and things you'd like us to talk about. We've had a huge response so far. We appreciate you doing that. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and find it on Spotify now too, as well as The Social Minute. New episodes every Monday. I appreciate you guys checking that out and giving that your support. And also the newest show, the Patreon exclusive Social Hour Morning Paper, where you can subscribe and find me 7 days a week. Every morning, you can join me as I drink my coffee and read the legitimate Yahoo News and talk about my day. It's a good time. So that's for Patreon exclusive members. So go to Patreon / Deese Comedy for that. All right, enough with the advertisements, guys. You know where to find me. We are. I'm excited to talk to my guest. He's been on the show before. You know him and have heard him around the region if you're in the Spokane area. Radio talent extraordinaire, up-and-coming comedian, Dan Roberts. Dan, how you doing, buddy? Good to see you.
Hey, Deese. It's good to see you. I'm doing good.
Yeah. So let's... where do we start? Dan was on the radio.
Past tense.
Dan is no longer on the radio. And unlike most men who lose their jobs in radio, it was not due to sexual misconduct.
No, that's correct. Yeah.
So you were like you're really breaking the mold here.
Yeah.
You're leaving on good terms on radio.
I did. It was very weird.
Are you allowed to elaborate? So you were on KZZU.
Correct.
For how many years were you with them?
Oh, geez, since 20. I mean, I have a long history with the station, but this most recent stint was, I think it started in 2013.
Wow. That's incredible. Especially one, I'm sure we talked about this when you were on the show before and other times, but that is a long stint for one person at the same station these days.
I suppose so. I mean, I morphed into different roles, so it wasn't like I had the same exact job the entire time.
Yeah, that's true. That does help. I mean, but just radio talent is so, unless you're like Howard Stern or some of these
right.
guys, radio talent is so transient, you know?
It is. It's very transient. And I listened to Elvis Duran's audiobook, his biography, you know, and he was talking about how it used to be transient. And I was like, dude, it's not transient for you because you're Elvis Duran in at C100 in New York. There, it's still plenty transient.
Right.
Sure.
You just do better now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like Kevin Hart saying, yeah, man, when you know, comedy used to not pay that well. It's like,
exactly.
It still doesn't.
I don't know. I'm doing pretty good. I've got basement is my closet now. Yeah. It's got a pool. I got a pool in my closet.
Turns out when you're selling out Madison Square Garden, you do a little better. It's not $100 a show.
Right.
So, but you were, you did a lot with the station and then you moved up, you were doing things with, Mike and Molly in the morning, correct? And then kind of ended up with your own show.
Dave, Ken, and Molly.
Mike and Molly. That's a different show.
If I was doing Mike and Molly, I would be like, making some Kevin Hart bucks.
Yeah.
Man.
You'd be on your way. Was that TV show?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God,
it was
okay.
Billy Gardell and Melissa McCarthy.
That's right. Okay. So Dave, Ken, and Molly. I took away and added some people. You were on, I made up a different radio show you were on.
Right.
You were on Dave, Ken, and Molly, and then ended up with your own afternoon show, right?
Yeah. Always had my own midday show. Did nights in Seattle, middays here and then produced the morning show. And then, did afternoons.
Okay.
Which is where I've been. And, I really applied everything I know about morning radio to afternoons, and which could have been like a death blow in itself because you always hear people complain that there's too much talking on the radio, right? And what they're really saying is that it's not interesting talk.
Sure.
I mean, it is. There's too much if it sucks, if it's boring, if it doesn't interest you. So I just tried to make everything entertaining. That was my first goal. All the stuff that has to do with selling something, I kind of put over the ramps of the records.
Yeah.
And so when I stopped down, it was strictly to inform and entertain. And I just was as goofy as I could be. And it was working. I mean, 100% it was working. But COVID happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't even know if I was on the radio right now, I couldn't say this because for whatever reason, you're not supposed to talk about it. But I think I can say, there's like four key demographics that I'm targeting. I was number one in two of those and number two in the other two.
Yeah.
I hit my bonuses. But if there's no money coming in from advertising, and I'm not picking on anyone, but the industry as a whole is hurting right now, as are so many other industries.
Right.
If there's no advertising dollars coming in, you can't afford to pay people bonuses at all, apparently. It's all out the window. Like, all bets are off in 2020, which we kind of already figured out. But
yeah, it's unfortunate because I was telling, I was talking to my girlfriend last night and telling her about who I was going to I was going to interview you, telling her, you know, who's on the podcast tomorrow. And I was kind of singing your praise a little bit, because I'm like, Dan really did what most people can't do in radio anymore, which is give you more talk, which is unfortunate, because I love talk radio and I love that format and entertaining DJs who can actually do it well. But that is going away and has been dying for a long time. And, you know, now that you're not in the industry anymore, currently you're still in the industry in a sense, maybe you'd be willing to talk to this a little, but speak to this somewhat. But in general, my experience with like radio program directors is they're the worst people in the world.
I've had some that were that definitely fit that bill.
I would say creatively bankrupt most of the time.
I don't even know if that's true, but they're cautious. It's like being a politician, I think. You know, it's like you might have entered with the best of intentions, and maybe you'd have a wild creative streak, but at some point, everyone's copying everybody else. The only records that are being broken are probably in LA and New York, right?
Right. Yeah.
At least in the United States. Everybody else is just copying off that playlist. So you feel for bands that are like submitting music to their local radio station, unless it's a rock station with like a specialty show, you know, backyard bands or something like that. There's that, you know, you might as well just send that demo off into a vacuum, because that's, you're going to get the same results.
Well, what a tough place to be in. I mean, literally takes in the spirit it's intended. I hardly even understand the radio anymore. Like, yeah. Honestly. And the only reason I understand listening to the radio is if you're going to tune in and find someone like Dan Roberts, or find someone who's doing something original and giving you a personality. Like, why is anyone going to the radio to listen to songs they want to hear?
That's a good question. And I don't think they are, for the most part, unless it's older people who don't have, or, you know, there's an economic aspect to that too. Not everyone has internet, as hard as it is to imagine. There's still people out there. So those are the people that are going to radio. It's cheap entertainment. It's free. It's in your car already. But you're right. Radio stations can't compete with Spotify.
Yeah.
And other services like that for your music. And so the only way to compete going forward is with personality radio. And that's being pushed heavily. But that's pre-COVID,
yeah.
You know, and I think once everything clears up, that'll still be the push. Now that's going to eliminate a lot of people who can't. The problem too is there's no training for anybody coming up.
Sure.
You know, although I would say anybody that grew up making YouTube videos or hosting their own podcast or whatever is, you know, miles ahead of anybody that's not. They at least have a sense. They might have to tighten things up, but they could, you know, I guess that's where the new crop will come from. And ironically, that's where the old guard is going, right?
So yeah, it's like on your way up and on your way down.
Yeah, it's crazy.
One of those.
It's exciting.
Things.
COVID's been exciting because, I mean, people can't see it, but like, you know, I've got this background behind me for my podcast, and I've been doing a lot of video editing. Now, I did video editing before, but now there's actually a reason to do it and do it frequently with new tools. And so for me, it's been a big, I mean, COVID sucks. I don't want people to get sick.
Yeah.
But the quarantining, the downtime, I've been more creative and productive than ever, and growing, learning these new technologies. So,
well, that is the good thing about it, is that, you know, if you use this time, wisely, and use this time we've been given, where people are turning to virtual sources of entertainment more than even they were before. Because, like, you know, I mean, yeah, virtual and online was growing, but also you can't, like, literally, especially now, as of yesterday in Washington, you can't even go out to eat, you know, you're right. Home, you're stuck at home.
Yeah.
And so the people who are still online and working online and cultivating content and building their audience and still delivering to their audience regularly are really leaps and bounds ahead of a lot of other people who just kind of went dark during this time.
And just to circle back to those program directors, though, yeah, you're right. You can't compete. You're not going to beat with music. You're just not going to beat the competition, which is Spotify and Apple and everything else. And so personality has to be key. Not everybody has developed that, so that's going to be a push. But anybody, any program director that thinks that having a jukebox is the answer, it's a losing battle.
Yeah.
I would imagine not everybody has figured that out, or they've heard the chatter, you know, develop your personalities, push the personalities, but they just don't, maybe they don't buy into it. I don't know. Like, there is a change. There's a wave of personality coming if people are smart, or we're just going to fold up and die.
That's we all could be dead soon with all this going on. So,
well, yeah, that's another story.
I just watched it maybe coming from a larger market like LA, and I know you worked in Seattle. So, you know, you can probably have some, yeah, I'm sure obviously in being in radio for as long as you have been, you have experience with this. But, I worked with some radio stations when I was in LA still, and like, you'd see these just like great talk radio stations that were killing it and doing well. And like, they were great in the ratings, but you know, a program director is like, God, I can fucking get an intern to program music and just not really say a lot. And then, you know, we just take, and it's just like, we don't have to pay this on air talent. And it just flips to like, you know, in top 40 station or an alt rock, you know, and you just end up with like, all right, I guess. But I mean, you're really not, I mean, it's cheaper, but are you, I mean, you're not, you know, what are you getting? What are you giving?
Yeah. What are you giving? That's a good question for sure. Part of that is voice tracking, which sounds evil, you know, like, which is where you pre-record your show and walk away, which some people can knock out a show in like 12 minutes, you know, 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
Because all they're doing is liners.
Right.
Which is to say, here's the name of the song, here's the artist, or join us this weekend at this event or what. And that's all they're saying. There's no content.
Yeah.
Really. And that's, but the way that I would use voice tracking would be to get rid of the dumb stuff or the boring, I would work ahead. And then I had more time to take calls or do basically a sketch for the radio or whatever it is. Like, there's a way, like, voice tracking itself is not evil, but the problem is that the bean counters use it exactly how you just stated. Whereas it should be a creative tool that gives you more time to do something special. But
yeah, there's just, you know, they, you know, I always just heard in radio, you know, faster, faster, more faster, less conversation, faster. If they're taking calls, they're like roll calls. 'Cause you just want to, like, you know, it's like, why don't you take a minute and let some of this breathe a little bit and let this develop. And that's the experience I always had of just like these people who just want it faster and more and don't really let anything open up and really see what they can creatively get out of.
The other thing, it's true. And that's probably the program director's influence. And the other thing is just nerves. Like, it's normal for a human in a conversation. If I stop talking right now for you, normally to fill in the gap, right?
Yeah.
It people, like, DJs are afraid to pause on the air. And like, I would, that's another thing I would do. And now this feels weird. Now I just feel like I'm tooting my own horn, but like, I was the same way, like, which is why, like, you race through whatever you're saying because you're so afraid of that, of dead air.
Yeah.
But you know, when I really started doing legitimate content, entertainment, storytelling, all of that, I figured out I don't have an audience to laugh at my jokes, so I might just pause a beat and assume hopefully someone got what I was doing.
Sure, yeah.
Or if it was dramatic, you know, same thing, an appropriate pause, and that just became part of the, and so in a way it was more like a podcast segment than a, you know, than the radio that you're talking about.
Which, you know, and I think as listeners, especially if they want to capture the younger demographic, because, you know, like you stated, older people aren't as technology savvy, so they go to the radio. But when you're talking about younger people, I mean, I don't know who in a younger demographic is really listening to the radio that much. but those people are listening to podcasts. And I think you said an important thing right there is that if you can make the radio sound more like a podcast, they may be able to survive, you know, because podcasts have advertisements now. So the advertisements aren't necessarily a bump from the radio. But I think, you know, adjusting adjusting the status quo of how radio is done now is going to be necessary to move forward for them to kind of survive in the new world order with this.
When some of the problem is the big media companies who I hope will hire me. I'm not against it. I haven't burnt any bridges,
sure.
You know, but they've homogenized the playlists. That's part of the problem. I really hope someday, and they're all getting into the podcasting business for what it's worth for them. I don't think they're the best at it, but they need to go away. Basically, when they go away, when they morph into something new,
yeah,
and those towers are available for mom and pop to grab again, I think that's when you'll see some interesting radio. Maybe that'll never happen. I've always kind of thought that it's just a matter of time before that happens, but I could be wrong.
Well, you might see some of these people who came up doing stuff like YouTube and podcasting and getting opportunities in radio, maybe getting opportunities to start running a smaller station somewhere, and that may build to a bigger station, but that may allow them to implement some of the things where they're like, hey, you know, let's open this up. Let's have this freeform conversation. Let's trust our talent to carry some of this afternoon instead of feeling like we have to, you know, shit out these three Britney Spears songs. That tells you what era I'm stuck in, like how old I am, or whatever the hell is play. I don't even know a current artist.
Yeah.
You know, and like that. And that may be the shift where they are able to compete. Because, I mean, their current model is eventually gonna die. It's eventually going to die if they continue that down that road. I mean, do we kind of feel that's – do you agree with that, or what do you think?
I mean, death is – I think they will adapt, you know. It's just a matter, but again, however many stations there are in the U.S., there's going to be people that are really late to that party. The radio is late to the podcast party. I've been listening to podcasts since at least, I mean, I don't want to say the wrong, I feel like it's been over 10 years that I've been enjoying podcasts.
I know it's been at least, it's been like, I think 11 or so for me at least, because it was around the time I moved to Spokane. Like right before I moved to Spokane, and that was just over 11 years ago.
Yeah. So, and I will say this, while you were talking, I was reminded that it's not like there's no training ground. There are kids, like I have a friend that's a teacher at Mercer Island High School. Mm-hmm. They have a radio station, you know, so there are high school radio stations and college radio stations throughout the country. So there is a training ground for some of it, but where are they going to go with that? I mean, they're probably, it's a marketable skill, the skills that they're learning, but maybe not for the actual quote unquote radio industry. You know, they might be better. They might be headed into some kind of digital media or television or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's tools with broadcasting in general but that doesn't necessarily mean, being on the radio or how the radio does it now. There's, but those skills can be used. And I think that platform or that media is going to exist. I think it needs to evolve, and some of the dinosaurs will kind of fall off, and it'll still exist in a sense. It's just you know, those, as it adapts, people will either, you know, stations and executives will adapt with it or they won't.
And,
you know,
and the other thing is that talent isn't always talent, but the hosts also have to put some effort into stuff, you know, like it's just like you were probably always funny, but when you decided to take the stage as a stand-up comic, you put work into that, and you put work into it constantly, you know. And that's the same thing for me. I was always learning and growing and trying to push, see what I could get away with. I don't know that that's the case a lot of the time, and some of that might be because they feel like they've got a dog leash on from from management or something. I don't know. Or maybe they just don't. They just think, well, I love my job and I've always wanted to do this, but I leave it behind when I leave the building for the day.
Yeah.
Which you can't do. You've got to always be like doing something to improve.
Yeah. Especially in an age or when there's people can, you know, literally watch someone from anywhere in the world. You know, you can listen to the radio in North Korea, maybe not North Korea, South Korea. North Korea is a little more locked down. North Korea's radio is just like, everything's fine. We're good here. Don't worry.
Right. That's right.
But I mean, you know,
Here's a song. Here's a song my grandfather wrote. It's called Help or Eight yeah, Days a yeah, Week by Senior Un.
Yeah.
Grandpa Un. Go ahead.
No, but I mean, you know, back in the day when you were listening to radio in in Spokane, you would just, or wanted entertainment in your car, you had the radio stations from in Spokane. Now you have hundreds of thousands of podcasts. Yeah. You have YouTube. You can watch Netflix while you drive if you really want to be risky. Hell, you can watch YouPorn if you really want to be risky.
Yes, that's true.
But like, I mean, you've got everything.
That's the thing. When you think about, well, how are we going to reach our listeners, or what are our listeners' habits, you know, and let's get a focus group or whatever, which is actually good. Focus groups will demoralize you, but it's important because you have preconceived notions and then you hear people just legitimately talk about their reaction to everything from the zaps and pows between records. To,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, oh my God, this is, you got to take it seriously, but also just look at your own habits, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I unwisely bought a new vehicle before becoming unemployed. So I have satellite radio. So I listen to a lot of Howard Stern now, and I listen to stuff that would never make it on broadcast radio. There's a station called First Wave, which is all kind of that early new wave stuff. It's a lot of Clash and just there's stuff I've never even heard of, but it's fun because it's new to me.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then I listened a lot, you know, I listened to Conan. I listened to Mark Maron. I listened to a show called Good One from Vulture, which is a guy interviewing a single comedian, focusing on a single joke and just dissecting it like a frog in a lab. Yeah. And so, you know, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that. So when, you know, the radio people need to think about, well, what is grabbing my attention?
Yeah.
How can I give a dose of that to my audience?
Yeah. Know? That's kind of touches on what I was saying a second ago. I think, you know, if you had radio stations that basically programmed their stations like a podcast network and offered things like that, maybe not as specific as Good One, because that is a very specific audience.
Very niche.
Very niche. But there's something to that model that I think is the future for a lot of these stations. Because as you get to, you know, if you're creating something that's unique content, more and more every day, I mean, there's technology barriers, there's economic barriers that keeps people from having the internet, but most people in America have a smartphone. Most people have like YouTube or Spotify.
A good majority.
Majority. So, I mean, they have access to any song they want anytime. So like what they don't have is whatever your XYZ station decides to put on the air that day that no one else has. And when you get that, you may actually see creativity really bubbling out of radio again, and have unique networks around the country, you know?
Yeah. I miss the heyday. I've never done drugs, you know, it's not my thing, but at the same time, I love the,
how do you know it's not your thing? You've never done them.
That's true. I love the stories from older jocks. That was one of the fun things about going to Seattle, was working with some really legendary guys and hearing their stories about, you know, that the hazy 70s, which is cool for two reasons. The stories are just outrageous, but also just the cheesy. I mean, it looks cheesy now. It probably was cheesy then, but just the imagination that went into some of their, not even on the air, that too, but like the promotions and stuff, you know? If they wanted a station car that was their own version of a Batmobile or some cool, they would build it, you know? And they had no budget for it, so it looked bizarre, but it was cool. That just doesn't go on anymore. It's very corporate. now. And it's very cookie cutter.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the problem. And you kind of touched on that earlier, the corporations buying these media companies, and that's, they, as you said, homogenized it, made everything kind of like, listen, this is our playbook and we just buy this market. We buy Pittsburgh and we buy Oklahoma City, you know, and we buy Denver. And then we just apply this same model to all of them and just, it's like, and then we just have them in maintenance mode instead of really looking at it and be like, how do we really make this station its own and make it something people talk about and really want to listen to and make it unique, you know?
Yeah. Maintenance mode is really handy, though, until it becomes stale, you know?
Right.
Everything should not remain on that calendar year after year. Or if it is, it needs a tweak. It can't just be like, well, we did this last year and it worked. Let's do it exactly the same. I mean, that's, again, it's handy, but come on, let's try to grow and be better than that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so the, you're doing the podcast now. I want to get into that in a second.
Daily Detour. Which is not a niche podcast.
It's not,
which is
very broad.
It's like the first thing I wanted to do, I've always wanted to do a podcast. I kind of couldn't under my contract.
Yeah.
I could have, but they would have owned it and I wasn't happy with that.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to at least get a piece of it if it turned out to be a success, which is like winning the lottery. I get it, but God forbid you win the lottery and you have to hand everything over to somebody else, right?
Yeah.
So, but with this podcast, it's not a niche podcast. It's very much like, you know, I heard from a lot of listeners that said they were going to miss me and everything. I'm like, well, I want to stay connected to those people and I want to give them what they expect from me. And it'll probably morph as it goes along, but it's kind of the stuff that you would hear me talking about on the radio to begin with. So kind of a broad variety of good news and weird news and some celebrity stuff. It's going to be daily Monday through Friday. So I'll try to make it as topical as I can.
Well,
you know,
I do want to talk about that and we'll get into the, I want to dig into that in a second. I want to ask you a little more about, the radio in general and kind of your, not details specific about your separation from KZZU, but like, I mean, is the idea for you, ideally, would you like to be back into radio? I mean, do you think the podcast is the future for you? I mean, obviously if it hits, that's the way you'd stay, I assume, if it's blowing up. But, you know, I mean, are you looking for radio jobs or?
I'm looking for a morning radio job. That's what I want. And I don't know if it's going to be in Spokane, which upsets my friends and family,
sure. But
it's the reality of it. It's WKRP in Cincinnati. That's Google it, kids. It's a show about radio.
Yeah.
That's still, other than the records that they're playing and the equipment that they're using is still like so damn real, which I didn't know when I was a kid, you know, but it really is everything you need to know about radio personalities. From on air to sales to general management, it's all in there. And what's the question? What's the question, Deez? I've forgotten.
So I mean, go ahead.
No, yeah. The plan would be to do radio and to do mornings in radio. I would take a good afternoon job. Really, I want to bounce upward. Would be my plan.
Sure.
Now, if the podcast actually took off in some miracle fashion. Quickly, because I think even if it does well, it takes like 6 months to 2 years to really grow to a decent size where you might be making some kind of income from it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a part-time jobs income or less. I don't know. It's pennies on the dollar, you know, from what I understand. So really, I'm doing it for fun. I'm doing it to stay connected. A radio gig would be awesome. If it took off, though, and I've got a lot of other interests, so... I mean, I could also see a future where I'm just doing all my passions and none of them pay great, but maybe accumulated if I can keep all those balls in the air, maybe that's enough to make up what I've lost,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's also kind of a pipe dream. I mean, really, I need a gig. The other scenario is I don't know what it would be, but there could be a more normal job that utilizes my skills.
Yeah.
Because I don't need the towers, right? Like, who needs that anymore?
Yeah.
I've got an outlet. And so if I have six listeners, at least there's six passionate listeners that, you know, appreciate what I'm doing. And hopefully that would grow or whatever. But broadcasting itself, I guess it's, I love it, but it's not necessary specifically, you know, and there's, it can be more exciting to do a podcast because you can, there are less restrictions, you know, and you can go off on tangents. And if you accidentally say a bad word, you can keep it or you can bleep it or whatever.
Yeah.
But.
With the separation from KZZU, obviously, you know, it was on good terms. It was related to the pandemic. It wasn't due to non-success of the show. As you said, you were doing great in all the important demos.
Yeah.
Is there any talk, was there any consideration of like, hey, when things bounce back, we may look at having you back, or are they just, this is just them moving forward. They don't see this coming back for them.
I think they're moving forward for now. They're not, there's no, the door isn't shut, but I also think it's going to take them a while to, first of all, we're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can make up a year's worth of revenue quickly. I mean, I'm sure they're going to proceed cautiously and as cheap as possible. And I'm putting words in their mouth, and I'm not just speaking for them. I'm speaking about the whole industry.
Yeah, sure. Radio as a whole, not specifically for any station.
Yeah.
So I mean, the door's not painted shut, but I assume we're looking at, they are, radio in general, but even your former employer kind of just moving forward as probably on some more budget routes, we'll say.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be, and I'm sure I'm not the last, you know, and it wasn't, my contract was up. So it's not like they just let me go.
Okay. So that
in like mid. Yeah. So
things like that were in consideration where it's like, well, you know, we re-up this contract and they're on the hook for potentially, however, you know what I assume,
right?
3-5.
As people's contracts come up, I'm sure if the world stays in this dire situation, unfortunately, there's going to be more people like me. And I know there's people at other companies in other markets that are still going, you know, they're suffering the same fate for whatever reason.
Yeah,
I mean, for COVID, but you know,
yeah,
but budget cuts because of COVID, I guess.
Yeah, what an unfortunate. You know, and I'm sure you've already considered this, people already thought this, but what an unfortunate way for it to have to end, knowing that it was going well and, you know, under better circumstances of the economy, like, you know, you'd still be employed. And great, like you said, there's a lot of people in those circumstances in different different jobs, but like, you know, fuck them, we're talking to you right now. So... But
I thought of this too. In 2008, I was doing this a couple of animated web series, and one was Dilbert and one was Over the Hedge, and I had roles in each of them doing voice acting, which I used loosely. I sucked when we started, kind of. Some of that was direction. I mean, I will, you know, like, but I, that's on me because I wasn't a seasoned actor of any kind. So when someone gives you direction, I didn't have the capacity to kind of fire back and do my, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It
how
just
to
could have
apply
been better.
Their direction necessarily.
Or that too. But as we went along, I got better and better, you know, and it was a success. But then 2008 hit and they lost their funding because they had a bunch of different investors. So in a way, that was another cool thing that I really saw as a stepping stone to other cool things. And it was like, here's the rug, let's pull it out. What do you do?
Yeah,
it's life.
No, I get. Yeah, I mean, it's especially now, and you know, like we've said, so many people. It's you. You know, everyone feels bad, and everyone is being affected in different ways. But it's unfortunate. But I mean, and I guess some sort of solace is not that. I don't know if this is better. Like, you know, misery loves company to be commiserate. But like, everyone's feeling it somehow, and it's kind of, you know. So you can't really. It's hard to focus on yourself or anyone necessarily.
Well, yeah, you can't feel, you have to feel, well, without getting into the politics of it all, you most of us are able to feel other people's pain at this moment in time, you know, have a little empathy. And yeah, while the weirdest thing though, Deese, this is so, and I swear to God, this is true. Cause I had a friend reach out to me, a coworker reach out to me immediately.
Yeah.
Like, hey man, are you okay? And this is literally, I said, you know, it's weird, but the thing that bothers me most is I was let go on like October 28th or something. Mm-hmm. I had two more days left in the week. So however that falls, and I was doing a month of Halloween spooky stories.
Yeah.
And I just felt bad that I didn't get to finish. I didn't get to air the last two stories. I felt like it was like some promise that I broke, even though I didn't break it,
right,
but it was like some promise I broke to the listener. So again, that's why the podcast is going to happen the way it's happening is to, because of those people that enjoyed the show.
Well, now you got to the podcast pretty quickly. I mean, within a couple, 2-3 weeks, you were doing the podcast, but let's talk about immediately after kind of the separation from KZZU. Were you, how did it feel? I mean, obviously you were not thrilled about it, but like, did you take a moment to enjoy your afternoons again and kind of, you know, be like, all right,
I'm watching a lot of thrillers I'm trying to get stuff done in the morning and at night and then in the afternoon because my wife hates horror.
Oh,
and, you know, I mean, and so I've been watching a lot of horror and also like crime thrillers that may kind of veer into a little bit of horror.
What are you watching? What's Dan Roberts catching up on or watching?
Old and new. Yeah. I watched, apparently I was watching people get stalked for a while. I watched The Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss. I thought that was good.
The new one? That was great.
I thought it lived up to the hype. You know, there was a lot of buzz on it and you're like, it can't be that good, you know, out of nowhere, this thing, but it was.
I thought that was a really phenomenal film. That was very well done, a good spin on a classic. Instead of rehashing the same type of Invisible Man type shit, the way the spin they took on it was very interesting.
Yeah. And then also interesting that she's in another show about men trying to control her, right?
Like, is she?
She's the Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, is she in that? I've never seen that.
Yeah, she's the star of that. Okay. That's a creepy future.
Yeah.
I watched Play Misty for Me with Clint Eastwood, which is about a radio DJ who has an obsessed fan. I wonder why I wanted to watch that. It was good. It's a good enough movie, but it wasn't particularly scary other than a few different scenes. It was enjoyable. It needs to be remade. That one needs to get remade.
Is that an old one? How?
It's like 1971 or 72, 73, somewhere in there. I watched, what the hell was it called? The Sound and the Shadows, which is like some independent movie from 2014. And my favorite movies are like Hitchcock and Brian De Palma and like Rear Window.
Sure.
Yeah, Rear Window, you know, you have a voyeur.
I like that you said Hitchcock and Brian De Palma in the same. I feel like those aren't the same people, but
they are. Well, Brian De Palma gets compared to, he's accused of ripping off Hitchcock all the time.
I mean, I would, Scarface
True. But those in Scarface is good, but it's not like my favorite De Palma are the ones that lean towards Hitchcock. You've got Blowout and Body Double, which people make fun of because it's dirty and everything, but it's also really a cool flick.
Didn't he do Carrie?
Carrie.
Yeah.
And then the other one, Dressed to Kill, but most of these have voyeurism in common, whether it's through binoculars or a camera or a window or through a microphone. Mm. And so this movie, the Sound and the Shadow, is about kind of an introvert who's home and he's got mics set up all over the house and he's recording, he's collecting, he's hoarding audio sounds from his neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then this little girl goes missing and he has audio clues to her.
Oh,
what may have transpired. I'm not saying it's a 10, but it was super interesting, especially for me, because it really, it like had elements of Rear Window and Blowout kind of mashed up together.
Well, if you like movies where people are voyeuristically spying on each other, have you heard of a little 1993 thriller starring Billy Baldwin known as Sliver?
I have, but I repressed it. I didn't remember that that was the deal. That was Sharon Stone's follow-up to Basic Instinct, which I love.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you know how Hollywood is. Now we can only cast her in this type of movie.
Right. Now we got to make her naked in everything.
I don't remember liking that movie, though. Nudity aside.
Yeah, Sharon Stone nude aside, which is not. Yeah, that didn't make a movie. I actually watched Basic Instinct not that long ago.
Did it hold up?
Yeah.
It's not a great. I mean, it is what it is, but it's a provocative, kind of exciting thriller. It may not be particularly smart.
I feel like that was a weird time of movies like where everything was about kind of, they wanted to see how far they could push sex in film in the early 90s, like Basic Instinct, Fatal Attraction, like Indecent Proposal. It was like this weird time in the early 90s where they're like, we want to show hot girls boobs and kind of write a story around it. you know?
Well, you should, I mean, you take a look at, starting with Carrie. You remember Carrie?
Yeah, I watched that opening sequence of Carrie. Yeah.
Holy cow. I mean, there's stuff you can't get away with now just in the opening scene alone. Nowadays, it's usually a man. It's usually, if it's full frontal, it's a man.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of man ass in the words of, I think it was Bill Hicks that had the whole bit about man. It was a Harry, Bob, and man ass show on the Spectrovision in his hotel room. But if you look at, like, especially with comedies, if you look at the 70s, early 80s, it's like softcore pornography, really.
Yeah.
And then there was some kind of a backlash with the Motion Picture Association of America, which there's a documentary on that the rating system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very much influenced by this religious group.
Oh, really?
And I'm sure that's when all that stuff went away. And so even the 90s stuff seems like timid compared to what they were getting away with in the 70s.
Yeah, well, you watch shout out to Paris Herbert Hilton from not Paris that Paris Hilton, but Paris Herbert from Age Like Milk podcast, a guest on the show not that long ago. She watches old movies and then talks about how they haven't necessarily aged well. And we, you know, we talked about a couple films specifically. She's like, do you have any, you know, that you would recommend? And I'm like, well, first of all, let's talk about Porky's. Like, talk about a movie that doesn't age well. Like, it's just basically sexual assault and anti-Semitism for 97 minutes.
The first one? Well,
Porky's?
But the second one, yeah, but the second one addresses that whole, because they're Jewish characters, or there's a few of them, so they do address that.
Oh well,
it's not like it's pro that.
I didn't follow the franchise to get the get the origin story of their anti-Semitism, Dan.
I know, and I remember this though. In the third one, there's a reboot that I watched late at night for whatever reason. It's awful. It looked like it was straight to video.
Yeah.
From the 90s, except it was like the 2000s. No, but I think the third one actually has the Ku Klux Klan in it.
Jesus. Like, they really go full
circle. But they're taking
circle.
Them on. They're not like, hey, Pee Wee, do you want to be a Klansman? Sure.
They take, you know, Porky's taking on
Pee Wee, join my militia. No.
Yeah, they moved to North Idaho. Porky's in the panhandle.
But I don't know that Porky's was great at the time. Like, everyone knew. It was all about the TNA and some laughs, and it was never quality. The weirdest thing about Porky's is that Bob Clark, the guy that made Porky's, also made the Christmas classic A Christmas Story with the Red Ryder air rifle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he also made a horror movie that's been redone now, and I haven't seen either, but it was called Black Christmas, which is kind of a Christmas slasher movie. So he's made two very different Christmas movies, and then Porky's.
You know, but back then they only had like four directors and they just all did everything, you know. It was, you know, once Roman Polanski flee to France, they had three. So they were like, listen, we can only do so much here. You're going to direct everything.
Well, that was the debut. The 70s were the era of the, what do they say? What do they call this? It was when the directors became a name and left their stamp on everything. And nowadays there's still some of that, but not as much. You know, that was like Coppola and Scorsese and
Oliver Stone,
George Lucas, kind of went, and
Spielberg,
all of those guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had a point of view. they had a point of view like Bob Dylan or Bruce Springsteen.
Sure.
Or Ariana Grande. No, I'm kidding. I love her, but you know, it's a different thing. Yeah. They had a point of view that they put out there. You kind of knew what you were getting when you went to one of their movies.
Yeah. They were making their movies as opposed to the studio hiring a director to make their movie.
Right. You know? Exactly.
So, and that, yeah, yeah, there's still some of that, you know, I think, you know, Tarantino, maybe Aronofsky, maybe not anymore. Darren Aronofsky had that for a minute. He's a little, you know.
Well, and the dude, I don't really care for, I'm not a fan, and he's got a cult following, but and now I can't remember it, but the guy that did, like, The Life Aquatic.
And, Wes Anderson. And,
yeah, he's one of those guys.
Yeah, definitely. Wes Anderson, what's his name? Taiki Waititi.
Taika Waititi.
Yeah, he's getting there. He's got that. I mean, well, personally, I thought Jojo Rabbit was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time.
I haven't gotten over Hitler yet. I haven't watched it, but I've heard nothing but great things about it.
It's
but
phenomenal.
A kid whose imaginary friend is Hitler is sort of a tough one for me to.
It's great. He does it in the most clever. The whole story is, you got to see it, Dan. It is a phenomenal film.
Now, what is it dark? Is it lighthearted? Are there a lot of laughs, or it's
there's
like,
a lot like of a, laughs,
like belly laughs, or just kind of like smart wit?
Both. Okay. And I have not laughed that hard at a movie in years.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Yeah.
You've got me talking now. So it's like,
no, it's just, it's a fantastic, it's everything you want in a movie. It's funny, without being a comedy. But it's very, very funny. It's thoughtful. It's well written. The pathos is everything about it. There's moments of there's, you know, where you're sad, you're happy, you're laughing. I mean, everything is there. There's a great story in it. You know, that I know that initial, like the elevator pitch on Jojo Rabbit seems insane, but it is absolutely one of the best films you'll ever see.
Was it backed by a major studio, or did it get picked up once they saw it at a festival? Because it does seem like a tough sell.
I don't know. That's a good question. Honestly, I would guess it was probably picked up after a festival type thing. Cause that's the type of thing where there's no way you could get, I feel like no studio is going to look at that and be like, okay, what about Hitler kid, youth Hitler? So the main character is a Hitler youth kid and his imaginary best friend is Hitler. I'm like, nah, we're going to pass.
Yeah.
What else have you been watching? What other thrillers? What else have you been doing to stay after you know, that time off in between?
There's another, and they don't, I don't know what it is. I do love crime stories, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but often you feel it's like horror movies, man. Like when I was a kid, I just binged on horror. I was so addicted to horror.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is once you get past your Hall of Famers, your must-sees, and you're looking for that, it's like a drug addict, like chasing the dragon or something, right? Like you're looking for that next thing that's going to make you jump out of your seat or give you that thrill. And there's a lot of crap. And so you end up feeling like you ate too much Halloween candy.
Right.
And I think the crime genre can be sort of similar, only maybe not as bad because there's a little more story.
Yeah, a little more meat on the bone.
A little more meat on the bone. But so yesterday I watched a long Came a Spider, which I never watched, with Morgan Freeman. It's a James Patterson one. It's pretty good. I think I have a little crush on a 2004 Monica Potter, or however old that movie is. She's much older now. I don't know. And then there's another one on Hulu, and I forget the name of it, but there's another James Patterson that's like brand new. Hulu's been doing some solid stuff. And also I noticed that Netflix has, I think we can thank or blame Hallmark Christmas movies for the sudden emergence of new Christmas movies on almost every platform.
Yeah, that's such an easy,
the Hallmark ones are all just really rom-coms
disguised as
Christmas movies, but the Netflix ones are a little bigger budget and a little more fantastic, a little more whimsical.
You know, there was a time, I was talking about this with someone the other day, where there's a time when Netflix first started doing original content, and you'd see that little N up in the corner of the icon. You're like, oh, it's a Netflix original. And you could count on it being good. Now what happens is now Netflix is the man. Everyone becomes the man. And once you become the man, you become what you set out to defeat. And now they're just cranking out so much content that like most of it is trash. So there's I don't find myself ever wanting to watch the Netflix stuff because I've been burned too many times.
Yeah. Well, the series are good. The movies, I would say, are miss and hit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think the series are really good.
Which series, what's on there that you...
Well, the one that I'm jonesing for right now, and I can't speak for season two, but the first season of Umbrella Academy was incredible, and I'd like to watch that again. Stranger Things is good for me.
Did you not watch season two of Umbrella Academy?
I haven't watched it yet. I watched The Boys on Amazon instead, which was fantastic.
I liked The Boys a lot better. I just finished The Boys the other night. I watched Umbrella Academy a couple months ago. Umbrella Academy was good.
I compare them, though. They're different animals, you know?
Well, I mean, they're both comic book stories. Umbrella Academy is a ripoff of X-Men. Boys is a ripoff of Watchmen.
Academy, though, is quirky. Umbrella Academy is the X-Men by way of Tintin or something. Like,
yeah.
If you're familiar with European... I mean, it's a weird... take on it, and it's the guy from My Chemical Romance,
right?
Gerard Way. It's his deal. I loved the comics, and I thought they did a great job of adapting it. But I haven't seen season two yet. The Boys, I like because it's in the vein of like, it's satire, really.
Yeah,
and it's like Planet of the Apes or Westworld or something. Like it's like, and it, but it also is so freaking true. It's frightening, you know?
Yeah, the ability, Garth Ennis, I believe, is the author for that. Garth Ennis, who did that.
Yeah.
He's an amazing writer. And you could tell. I mean, I've read a lot of his stuff for the last, Garth Ennis, for 30 years. I've been reading his comic books, you know, stuff he did. And he's really great at that kind of realistic set in a fantastical world. I like season one a lot. Season two... yeah, it didn't grab me as much. There were certainly great moments, but
The Boys,
yeah.
It took me a while to get through it, for whatever reason, but mostly just because I'm weird. I'm really weird when it comes to dark material, before bedtime, basically. Like some of those shows make me really anxious, in a weird way. Plus, it's serialized, so you know you're going to end on some question that you want the answer to.
For
whatever reason, it just took me a while to get through it. You could watch it in, how many episodes are there? Eight?
Yeah, I think 10? Eight per season.
So 8 days, right? Maximum. But no, it took me weeks and really like a month and a half or something to get through The Boys. But I still liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. I did, you know, I was really... I kept hearing so much about it online, and you know, half the people were like, season one was great, season two was terrible, and the other half were like, season two is way better. So I wasn't sure. But I mean, I liked them both. I'd say season one was great. Yeah. Season two was good.
He's the Transmetropolitan guy, right?
Yes. That's Warren Ellis.
That's Warren Ellis.
Different, similar-ish stuff, but Warren Ellis, you know, they're, but Garth Ennis.
Warren Ellis is Planetary.
Yes. Yes.
But Garth, okay.
Warren Ellis.
Oh, Garth Ennis.
Garth Ennis, right. And Warren Ellis.
Warren Ellis, right.
Yeah, Warren.
This is all getting clipped anyway, right? This whole tangent.
Warren, I would say Garth Ennis does more dark, realistic, violent but biting satire. Warren Ellis is a little more high concept, psychological, kind of noir.
Well, I love Transmetropolitan. I only brought it up because I there's a very strong rumor that it's being made, but I don't know if it's going to be a series or a movie. I mean, if it's a movie, it'll be a franchise, I'm sure, but I'd almost prefer to see it the way they've handled The Boys, or
where you have that kind of autonomy to at least do a lot, but keep it a little more compartmentalized. So that's funny. I actually almost bought the first volume of Planetary trade paperback today. I haven't read it since it came out in its original format, serialized. I almost bought it today.
It didn't do as much for me as Transmetropolitan. I think that's like Spider Jerusalem to me is like one of the best comic characters in forever, since the dawn of I mean, you know, there's a lot of recycling between between the dawn of the comic book and then by the time we get to Transmetropolitan, then there's a lot of forgettable characters. Like that character is awesome and so flawed and so potty mouthed, and it's like Hunter S. Thompson in a
that's a good comparison.
Cyberpunk future, you know.
Yeah, that is what I like about the I went into one of our local comic book stores, Merlin, today, and spent some time in there. And that's one of the things I like about new modern comic books is that it's been like this for a little while, but it continues that trend of hyper realism, dark, satirical, instead of just this villain of the month type stuff they did before, you know.
It's very weird. Like, I still enjoy a good super, I'll go to all the Marvel movies, but I'm not really reading that stuff now, you know, and right. I still read comics, but Ed Brubaker, I love his original stuff.
Criminal.
I know he's done Criminal, awesome series, and Fatale, and right now I'm reading Pulp. And the weird thing about it is you can do anything in comic books. That's why you get these fantastic characters, but his crime stuff really is the equivalent of watching the Rockford Files or maybe a good, you know, like Seven or some good thriller. You know, it's just very human, but it's very literary too. You know, it may have words and pictures, but it's a freaking novel, really.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people really don't understand, is that how much you can do. I mean, I think people just see kind of that Marvel comic book stuff and don't understand what, is really in depth in some of these. And some of my, you know, before I finish this thought, Sleeper by Ed Brubaker is a great series. I highly suggest it's, if you haven't,
I haven't read that yet.
Yeah. Definitely read it. But, there was kind of this, you know, big revolution, I would say, I don't know. It was probably, you know, close to 20 years ago now where it kind of started. And people started taking, you know, it started with like Mark Millar and kind of the ultimate Marvel universe was a good post kind of around that time when Mark Millar and Brian Michael Bendis started the ultimate universe for Marvel. And you had a guy named Joe Casey who was writing a Wildcats series, which was originally like Jim Lee's Image comic book series from 93. And he took these characters that were like pale versions of the X-Men forever that Jim Lee created and put them in this like kind of crime thriller, but like funny and just like using these superheroes in a way that you didn't know you were allowed to. And it really like changed the genre of comic books,
right?
You know, and I loved seeing that. That was really like a vanguard for me. And I love seeing that still moving forward.
It's in the art has changed for better and worse. I think I like for a while I was super excited that everything wasn't cookie cutter.
Yeah.
And that you could really see an artist's style and you could even get something that was really cartoony or ultra realistic or painterly or whatever. Yeah. And I still like some of that, but unfortunately I hate to criticize and I don't have anybody specific in mind, but it also has just led to a lot of art that just isn't very appealing to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of very abstract, grainy type styles, you know, you see that are very popular.
The masters of the, you know, the people we grew up on came from advertising and came from art schools and learned the anatomy really well. And I'm not sure that training is really, it's not evident in what I'm seeing in a lot of, it's still there. There's still some great artists, but I'm just saying there's also a lot of stuff that just seems like it's like a copy of a copy of a copy. And now we're not, you know, the things, it's never good to, outside influences, I guess is the ultimate point of that in whatever art form that you are embracing. You can't just be the thing that you admired, the guy that you admire or girl or whatever. They had all kinds of influences. You can't just take from that one. Well, it's very boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? I have one of my favorite artists ever is Chris Bocciolo or Boccolo. I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, but he's done a bunch of stuff. And it's very abstract, dark, and but it's a very unique style. There's moments because his style changes a lot and it'll depend on the inker he's working with too. And his style's evolved over the years. It used to be more traditional, and he's definitely found his more kind of his own style. But there were flashes for a while of like Bill Sienkiewicz in his art. If you're familiar with Bill Sienkiewicz, he was the original.
I saw one of his pieces up close at EMP, whatever, Mopop, whatever they want to call themselves in Seattle.
Yeah.
He had an X-Men or probably New Mutants cover.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about specifically, well, but he was the artist on that series for a long time.
Yeah, it's a cover that I was familiar with, but I didn't realize that it was really
mixed
media.
Is it the one with the bear?
The thing about it is it's got a piece of a motherboard or something like glued to the canvas along with this painting. It's really a mixed media piece.
Yeah.
It looked very abstract on the comic book as a kid, but you have when you see it hanging up like that, you're like, well, this is like a Picasso or something here.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that guys like that who were so talented and could be in, you know, maybe, I mean, I don't even know. I should probably be more educated considering how much I like Bill Sienkiewicz, but like he could have done art in any type of medium, and he did comic book art and in a time when like that was not how you did comic book art too, you know, like, and just completely, and on a series that was untested and on a series that was very tonally different from anything else Marvel was doing at the time. It just really, really, you know,
I didn't always appreciate it at the time. I have a greater respect for him now than I probably did as a kid.
Yeah. Same.
It was jarring as a kid.
It was a lot. Yeah. Very, very dark and heavy, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, when you're reading a spandex kid comic book, you're looking for that fluff and light and, you know, brighter colors, not this dark, heavy inked, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other weird thing about comics too. And Marvel's got it right with the movies, and some, for whatever reason, DC can't figure it out. They did good. They did well with Wonder Woman, but like, it's enough with the darkness. I think, I mean, moments can be dark.
Yeah.
But you know, people clearly like adventure, good characters and humor.
Yeah.
And I mean, not that there should be a cookie cutter formula, but you know, clearly whatever DC's doing is for the most part not working. And I think that's the true of the comics too. It's like, it can't all be nostalgia, which actually is what it is, because they just keep recycling the same characters and versions of the same storylines over and over.
Right.
It seems like, but there's also not that aspect of fun in them. It's like men who grew up reading comic books and now are molding the comic books to fit their adult selves.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the kids are left with. Maybe they don't care. You know, kids are busy playing video games, but
yeah, it's funny actually, as someone who was, you know, a huge comic book fan and grew up with it, you know, the, it certainly is a changing demographic, and it's, you know, it's not kids they're marketing to anymore. They're not really looking to get those, you know, in a sense, there's some, they're hoping to hook some with the movies and get them into the comic books. But you know, before, there was a time when the comic books sold the movies. Now it's the movies that sell the comic books. The comic books are just kind of
not
like
even.
This, yeah, it's like this lost leader of like, whatever, we just do this. And, you know, there's some that do well and some are just whatever. You know, before they were pulling stories from the comic books for the movies. And now they're like, whatever's happening in the movies, they're making happen in the comic books. So they kind of mirror each other.
Right. Well, and now Millar is creating comic books already knowing that he's going to sell it. Like it's for Netflix and his deal with Netflix.
Yeah.
For a series or a movie there.
Right.
It's very odd.
Yeah. It's just a different, it's, you know, I not in some senses, at least with Millar, it's original content.
Right.
Whereas with Marvel, you're just kind of manipulating the series to go in the direction, to look as close to the movie as you can, because if a kid sees the movie and wants to come to the comic book, you want him to feel familiar.
Yeah. It's very weird to me because it's not moving comic books, and I don't understand that. Like, it's so weird to me that Marvel can be one of the biggest entertainment brands on the planet, and you know, Spider-Man can make X number of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, and Avengers and whatever, and then it's not moving any product off a comic book shelf. It's just strange to me.
Yeah, it is. It is odd. Yeah, it's a weird beast these days. Well, let's before we talk about everything else.
That was a tangent.
Yeah, that's okay. I could talk comic books all day, man. I love them. Let's talk about your show though, The Daily Detour, the new show. It's out. People can find it. Tell people where they can find it.
That's a good question. Where do you get podcasts? Where do you get podcasts, Deesh? I mean, it's all the usual spots, you know. I mean, I guess the quickest way would just to be to go to find at Dan Roberts Voice on your favorite, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and you can get to it from there. But basically, just Daily Detour with Dan Roberts on if you have Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts, or if you're on Spotify, that's how you find it. And then just subscribe to it so you never lose track of it.
That's right. And get now. When you left the show, the radio show, how long after that were you like, I'm going to do a podcast? Or was
immediately.
It immediately? You knew
immediately. But then I was doing all my, I guess, in the corporate world, you'd say due diligence. I wanted to make sure that I did it right. And there was grabbing various social medias before someone else grabbed them, and
yeah,
websites and what have you. And then figuring out, You know, I have an announcer, and I have, you know, I have my friends in the band Quickie are kind of my house band, I'm calling them.
Okay.
And so it was kind of getting all that stuff squared away and some production and stuff. So, you know, there's just some pre-production work, I guess, that went into it.
So you know, you touched on a little bit earlier, but what's the format look like? Length of the shows? It's Monday through Friday. But like, what's the show going to look like?
It's a conversation. You know, I'll have guests on each week, and those guests will be on five episodes each, basically. And it's going through everyday topics that you might expect, some good news stuff, but also just timely stuff, some headlines. And it's really weird. We were talking about the radio show. The weirder I got on the air, the more personality that I gave, and the more that I really, which is, you know, I like stand-up comedy,
yeah,
and I've done some open mics and whatever, that also helped me out on the air.
Sure.
And all the things I was doing that I think would annoy the hell out of people, and probably did annoy some people, but it clicked with everybody else, right? Because now I'm showing my true personality.
Yeah.
So it's all of that. So if you hear me talking about celebrity news or whatever, it's not going to be just like me reading about it. It's like, I'm going to take an angle, maybe do a sketch about it, lean into what's funny about it, or make something funny about it. And I'll probably make it about me somehow. It might be about Kim Kardashian, but ultimately it's going to be about my stupid opinion on it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what are you excited about that you can do on this show that you weren't allowed to do on the radio? I mean, we're going to get more, you know, is it going to get dirtier? Is it going to be different? Is it going to be just kind of similar? I mean, are people going to be able
to?
It's going
to be very similar, and it'll probably morph. I guess the thing, the swearing and everything, there'll be like probably the lighter swear words I might let fly. You know, if you would have asked me a year or two ago, I would have said, oh yeah, I want to get on there and just let everything fly. The difference would be if I have you on the podcast and you tell a story, I probably won't edit it at all.
Yeah.
And I'll just run a disclaimer at the beginning of it, of the podcast, and maybe before the story hits again. I'm not going to censor my guests. That's not what I'm there to do. But I probably won't just go blue all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just maybe tackle some ideas that on the idea of censorship. I don't want it to be a political podcast, but at this point, just looking at it, if my guest goes somewhere politically, I probably won't edit that either. And I didn't really on the radio. I edited some of the harsher content in that, but I probably still would have let them go down that road, but I just would have trimmed it up a bit. I'll probably just let it go wherever it goes naturally.
Yeah.
And I probably will turn it into a therapy session like so many podcasts are, but I'm going to do that at the end of the podcast instead of the beginning. What drives me nuts about podcasts is when and this is the radio guy in me, they don't get to the point right away. Even the podcasts I love, sometimes I think they feel like I have nothing to say today, but the fans are used to me blabbing for 15 minutes, so I'm still going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. So I'm going to put that at the end. If there is any rambling, it'll be at the end.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good. Well, I mean, you know, you'll, like you said, it'll morph. You'll feel it out, find out what works and what you like, and, you know, probably what people like as they listen to it. You'll kind of figure out what the best way to, what's comfortable. Yeah. So,
And I've got a feedback line, which I'm not going to give out here because people won't remember it, but I've got an anytime listener line. So I'm going to get, hopefully get some voicemails that I can share with people that way. And through Facebook, maybe I'll get some of my old listeners on the podcast too, just to talk about topics. It's really just a round table, similar to stuff that you've done. You know, here's 5 days worth of fun or funny or weird or interesting topics. What are our feelings on these things?
Yeah. And so where the name Daily Detour, how'd that come about?
I had a laundry list of great ideas for names that were taken. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You're like, this is brilliant. And then you look it up and it's like, oh, it's already taken. Now they haven't been active in 2 years, but I don't know if I want to fight that battle. I'm just going to find something else. And Daily Detour, I came up with a lot of radio stations do the Daily Dirt, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was like, I came up with the Daily Dose, and I wanted Daily in the title because that tells you kind of what it is.
The frequency.
And then Detour is just another, you could look at it, it sort of sounds like a travelogue, but it also is like just a tangent, right? Like,
yeah.
It's an escape.
Yeah.
It's your daily escape. Like, you've got important things to think about and none of them are going to be addressed for the next 20 to 30 minutes.
So what's length of the show?
I don't know my ideal goal would be like 20 minutes a day, but if it turned into 45,
there's no cap.
However it's long just, it needs to be.
Got it. Yeah. So,
but the best case scenario is people are back to work and they decide that this is what they're going to listen to on the way to work.
Yeah.
And so it's about the length of their commute or the length back and forth round trip,
Yeah. What were some of the names that were taken that you tried to get?
Oh, that's a good question. And some of these, I won't tell you everything because I do have ideas for more what people would say is a smarter approach to podcasting, which is the niche market. And I still want to do that. Let's see here. Dun, 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 dun. I have so many notes, Deese. All I do is take notes all day.
That's, yeah, you and me both, man. You gotta.
Well, I almost went with Dan Roberts is desperate for attention, which is funny to me, but I didn't, you know.
I like that.
Raised on Radio was another one, but it's too generic. It doesn't really say what it is. Oh, Vaguely Interesting was one I seriously considered, but it doesn't tell you. I mean, it sort of does. I don't know.
It's vague right in the title.
Yeah.
So it's vaguely, it doesn't tell you what it's about. Yeah, it's vaguely. Yeah.
Here's one I probably shouldn't give out because I still think it's a good name for something, but Revenge for High School with Dan Roberts. And I don't even necessarily have like a ton of high school issues, but I just like that name.
God,
and that one's not even taken. You asked what was taken. That one's not taken. It is now that this is streamed into someone's...
That one is taken, actually. You said you didn't you say you purchased that? No one else can get
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I made better than nothing is not a good one. But by that time, my wife shot this one down. It sounds dark. I just thought it sounded funny. But Residence at Risk with Dan Rock.
God,
but it does sound like something more sinister. Sounds like a sex offender has moved into the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So maybe not a good idea. I cannot find the ones. I cannot find my little footnotes. But anyway, you get the, I mean, there's some horrible names on here. And then some that were great that were taken.
Sure.
And everything's taken. That's the most humbling thing. When you actually think of something that's so out of, like, you really put thought into it and you put words together that have no business being together. And then it's like, there's two other versions of it already in existence.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah. Well, Daily Detour is good. I like it. It's like you said, it sells you a little bit about it daily. You're going in a different direction. You're going to get a different dose of what you're looking for that day. And there it is with Dan Roberts.
And don't write my name in a diary. If you get a diary, which is what happens in radio in Spokane. Because I don't want to give credit to anyone that's like, I'm not getting anything out of that. Don't, unless there's a podcasting measurement that I don't know about.
Oh, you mean subscribe.
The best thing you could do for me is to subscribe and to share it if you like it.
If someone is like, gets a letter from Arbitron.
Right. I don't need, you know, I mean, I'm on good terms and everything, but I don't want to give people points that should have gone to me. That's all I'm saying. So, is that horrible?
No. You want the credit for you, Daily Detour with Dan Roberts.
That's right.
So what about this? If a radio gig falls in your lap that or comes back soon somewhere, what happens to the podcast?
Well, this is what I want to have happen. Now I need to eat. So I don't know how hard I dig in my heels.
Yeah.
But I would hope that anything I do creatively from this point until the next gig, I keep doing, and it's just grandfathered in. I'll keep doing it. The question is who owns it, right?
Right. Yeah.
But it already exists. And that's one of the I created an LLC for this reason too, you know, so it's not just mine. It's, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm working for the LLC. So.
Sure. So we'll hopefully see. That'll be the loophole to keep you in business.
I don't know. Like if you like, I just don't, if you want to hire me, you should, and especially if maybe the podcast is what lands me the next gig and that's the other reason I'm doing it is to stay fresh and topical, just, you know, to be on the mic.
Yeah.
Plus it's just fun.
Yeah, it's nice to at least keep those reps and keep it going. And I mean, it is. There's nothing bad can come out of it. I mean, hopefully, yeah, they would be able to look at that and say that's, you know, a different animal. But, you know, I know, as you know, too, I mean, radio can be weird. You know, I've known guys that were radio DJs and, you know, would do stand up like you were doing. And essentially the radio station, you know, their program directors were like, yeah, we can't have you do stand up because they can't vet what you're saying on stage. And if they have like, you know, if they don't have control and how that reflects on the station or your personality on air. And it's like a lot of that, you know,
I think that also would have to be part of the whole discussion before I signed on the line.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are you like, this is what I do. Are you comfortable with that? Or what? You know, I don't want to go in with some vague notion that something I say might be inappropriate. Let's talk about what I can say or do off the air.
Right. Nothing has a hole. You can say ass. You can't say asshole.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a weird thing. I mean, for a creative person, the best case scenario is that you work for yourself and you're able to sustain a living doing that. But that's not realistic for a lot of us. So, you know. You do have to follow some rules to do your thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll be successful, you know, the Daily Detour and also, you know, something hopefully locally so you can stay in the area, you know, but if you get an opportunity, bigger and better, onward, upward, man. So.
Thank you. Yeah, that's, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Oh, all right. Well, Dan, God, we're at an hour 20 here, so do you got anything else you want to talk about or anything else you need to going on before we get out of here for the evening?
I got to go pick up some cardboard and a pallet of Sharpies from Costco. There's a guy moving off my corner shortly and I need to get there. And that's my gig right now.
Someone's got to get that corner.
No, the only other thing is I've got a merch shop that I launched as well, like t-shirts, you know, it's a TeePublic thing. So, and it's not just like Daily Detour because, you know, I only expect to sell a little bit of that, but I do these Christmas designs that are up there now.
Yeah.
And I imagine it'll turn into making fun of some celebrity or something in the future. You know, there'll be topical t-shirts and whatnot, but anyway, all of that, just go to @DanRobertsVoice on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and you'll find how to buy stuff if you want.
All right.
Or steal my ideas, you know, whichever you prefer.
Buy them. This guy, he's, help him out. It's holiday season. Buy, support local, support anything right now. So, all right. Well, Dan, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. Good talking.
Thank
you. I'm glad things are going well, and that sounds like, you know, you're in good spirits, and this is unfortunate that, you know, with the industry, but things are going to work out. You're doing good.
I didn't tell you this, and we're on our way out, but I will say I am in good spirits, and the weirdest thing is having to console other people when you tell them or they ask about it.
Oh, really?
And I imagine it's like getting divorced or losing a loved one, and people are constantly bringing it up to you, in a, you know, and they're sadder than me, I swear to God.
Yeah.
So that's been a weird thing. So
that's a good sign. With it. They're sad. They're sad. They're losing you. But you're. It's like they know something. You do. I have cancer. What's going on?
Should I be more? Yeah. Should I be more upset? I don't.
Yeah. No. Well, everyone, go to Dan Roberts Voice. Correct.
There's danrobertsvoice.com as well. But yeah, at Dan Roberts Voice on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram.
There you go. Follow, subscribe to Daily Detour on Spotify, everything. Stream it 24 hours a day. Get that income going. So, all right, Dan. Well, again, hey, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks. Thanks for being here. And I look forward to listening to the show. So,
all right. Love you, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
Love you, buddy. Good to see you. I will talk to you later. And for Socialer, I am Deese. Thank you very much, guys. And we will see you next week.